Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that did rather well in its Guess Who's Going to Win lead-up to the recent Academy Awards fiesta, which isn't always the case. In retrospect, though, some of this year's winners were fairly obvious. Can you say Oppenheimer? Others, though, not so much. That the documentary feature 20 Days in Mariupol won its category wasn't particularly surprising, but Io Capitano, which failed to snare the Best International Feature Film Prize, was less so, considering just how strong the five films in that category were. Anyway, we're going to discuss both films this week, beginning with a movie that is both still being reflected in the headlines of the day and at the same time representative of the ongoing and seemingly never-ending clash between countries and cultures that we label under an especially succinct and all-too-easy three-letter word, war. Ever since Vietnam in the 1960s, we've seen the horror of war played out on our television screens, bringing the reality of such conflicts directly into our living room. And yet the cruelty and often attendant criminal actions never end. Even as bombs fall in Gaza, battles continue to rage in Sudan, in Myanmar, and in Ethiopia, and to the point of the Oscar-winning documentary feature 20 Days in Mariupol, which is available to stream, in Ukraine. The film, written and directed and narrated by Ukrainian-born Associated Press journalist Mstislav Chernov, covers the first 20 days of Russia's invasion, specifically capturing the bombing of the Ukrainian port city of Mariupol. Chernov and his crew stay in the city as long as they can, portraying the plight of the city's residents in the hopes that what they film can help ramp up international support. Yet the images they risk their lives for, many of which are hard to watch, dead babies making particularly grievous imagery, are old news now. The war continues and people keep dying. What we're left with, as Chernov says, is powerful image that is painful to watch, to which he adds, but it must be painful to watch. To which I add, how could it be otherwise?
Yeah, I think we should stress in talking about 20 Days in Mariupol just how difficult this movie is. And whenever we review something on the show and it's streaming, so we watch it at home, I always try and sit down and watch the whole thing from beginning to end and really give it my undivided attention so that we can review it later. This is a movie where I took some breaks. I could not sit and watch it from beginning to end. There are images in this movie which you may have seen on the news because a lot of the footage that he captured ended up on TVs worldwide and is stuff that I cannot unsee. I mean, it's really, really difficult and harrowing in all of the ways that you would expect a film like this to be. I think what makes it more than just an on-the-ground document of this thing happening, and of course it's only scratching the surface because 20 Days in Mariupol is really seen through one camera crew's lenses. There was a lot more going on that they don't capture. What I think makes it a really compelling study of just the very act of photo and video journalism is that at one point Chernov is saying, it is important that we capture this. It's important that the world sees this, but it's also really difficult not to feel as we're here on the ground capturing it, that what we're doing is still futile mm-hmm. because we're capturing these images and we're broadcasting them around the world. And yet nothing is changing. We're still here and people keep dying. And he's kind of grappling with those feelings, even while being aware that, you know, what he's capturing is deeply important and will go into the history books. And it also was echoed in his Oscar speech where he got up on stage and he said, I don't know if this has ever been said on the Oscar stage, but I wish I had never made this movie. And I wish that I could trade this award for Russia never attacking Ukraine. And so you really feel the weight of what the filmmaker is doing on his shoulders. It's in the movie. And so it comes through the screen. I mean, how could it not? So yeah, another thing to note is that 20 Days of Mariupol is streaming for free on YouTube on the PBS Frontline channel. You can go and watch it. But again, be warned that it is really tough. I mean, they blur things on the screen, so it's not as graphic as it probably could have been, but it's still graphic. Just something to note there.
Well, even for those of us who saw many of these images more contemporaneously when they're happening, it's still shocking. So you can never become a nerd to what you're seeing on the screen completely because it's just beyond horrifying. And I think that the filmmakers in a setting such as this, I mean, they're trying to navigate this pathway between being sort of fly on the wall recorders of history. And then to some extent, they need the help of people throughout this process. They also feel compelled to help in some other instances, but yet they are staying true to their task. And that in and of itself, I think, is beyond challenging. But yeah, I mean, I think especially in Spokane, where we have a vibrant, robust Ukrainian community, I mean, I think having some understanding of what happened there, even if it's portrayed in this particular way, is important, because I don't know if we can appreciate fully the suffering. And Mariupol was just wiped out, basically, and it happened quickly, and people didn't know what to believe in terms of information they were getting about what was happening. And at different points during this film, they would say, there's a bomb or there's some sort of artillery in the distance. And it sounded to me like it was right there. And so just that unknown aspect of when is this going to destroy everything that I know and have? Because the scenes of the parents who've lost children, I mean, that's what's going to resonate with people. And so, yeah, people do need to be prepared. Important to see this, but not easy to watch.
Yeah.
You know, I can't help but think about the differences in coverage I mentioned in my lead-in about the late 60s in Vietnam, in which we started seeing things that we had never seen, World War II, Korea, we'd never seen them on television before. There was so much that was censored. And I remember seeing a news report of American soldiers burning down villages in Vietnam. And it's like, are these American soldiers doing this? And it was highly controversial. And now we're to the point where we have cameras that are watching dead babies and young boys with their legs blown off, and we're seeing everything, and yet nothing seems to change. It's almost in this era of reality television, it's like, oh, here's something more we can watch. And those of us with a conscience are horrified by what we see. But at the same time, overall, how many people are entertained by this? And I find it just depressing. I think 20 Days in Mariupol is an important film. It's a really well-made documentary, well worth the Oscar. The reporting was well worth the Pulitzer Prize that Chernov and his crew won. But what in the end does it change?
Well, and I think that we have to recognize that there were opportunities in this situation in particular to avoid this whole situation. And diplomacy, they tried to make that happen up front, up until, like, I think the day before the invasion. There were still opportunities to come to a different solution with respect to the contested territory and so forth. And I think that the one thing about 20 Days in Mariupol is that they're focusing on the people. They're not focusing on the politics, but you can't remove it from that context.
There are glimpses of it.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Sure. And of the way that it's being reported on, especially in Russia, there are glimpses of that in the movie. But you're right. For the most part, this is a boots on the ground kind of film, because they're there. What else are they going to do? They just have their cameras on. And I think the thing that's effective about that approach, I mean, because this is a film, even though it's also, you know, a document of real things, and it's 20 days, right? We see kind of the day-to-day escalation of the violence and of the destruction. And you watch as, you know, you kind of talked about this idea of where is information coming from? How is the communication getting in and going out? And it's, I mean, communication is severed. And of course, that's a tool of war all the time. Like, if you can cut the communication, then you can take over, essentially.
Well,
and we see that happen in real time.
And they do showcase the war crimes that occurred.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, hospitals off limits
maternity
completely.
Wards.
And here we have a maternity hospital that is,
it's terrifying.
You know.
Yeah.
To the point of communication, that's part of how well edited this movie is. Because even though it's a straight chronology, day one through day 20, at the same time, there are little subplots about how are they going to get this information out. They can only get a connection in this one corner.
They've got to fight
through snipers and tanks in the street to get to that spot. It is an amazingly made movie.
And going back to that idea of the ethics of being a photojournalist while this is going on, like, do you help? Like, how do you get engaged? There are moments where he'll tell somebody, to do something and then it doesn't go the way that he said it does. And he goes, should I have done that? Should I have entered into this? So there's lots of fascinating stuff going on in the midst of this really terrifying
film. Very graphic movie. Yeah. Warning, warning, warning.
Yeah.
And that was our discussion of 20 Days in Mariupol, the Oscar-winning documentary. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk about Italy's nominee for Best International Feature Film, Io Capitano. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Spokane Public Radio Listener Line.
I'm remembering when you first started. I was working in the Spokane Peace and Justice Center. We were talking about this new public radio, and wasn't it great that public radio was coming to Spokane? And I've always been appreciative of public radio ever since. And I'm just so grateful for public radio. Thank you so much.
509-232-6904.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Oscar-winning documentary feature, 20 Days in Mariupol. Let's now turn to a film that is every bit as intense, not to mention reflective of a contemporary social problem, Italy's nominee for Best International Feature Film, titled Io Capitano. It's not as if we haven't already seen any number of stories about immigrants struggling to find their way to a better life, but seldom have stories been told as dramatically or as well as Italian director Matteo Garrone manages to do with Io Capitano. Based on a number of real-life stories of Africans attempting to make long and dangerous treks to Europe, Garrone's film centers on two teenagers from Senegal who dream of becoming European pop stars. That fantasy is what drives them to leave their home, ignore the warnings of those who know better, place trust in those whom they shouldn't, and suffer one indignity and injury after the next before arriving at a point where, even if the experience has seen them grow from mere boys into something much closer to actual men, their future is still in doubt. When it premiered at the 80th Venice International Film Festival, Io Capitano received a 13-minute standing ovation, and much of that, most likely, was just as much an appreciation of the strong lead performance of 17-year-old Senegalese actor Seydou Sarr as it was for the frightening intensity of the film overall.
Manola Dargis, writing for the New York Times, started her review of Io Capitano by stating, "The Italian director Matteo Garrone has a talent for cruelty." And to put that in a context, she goes on to explain, in this particular film, the focus really is on the characters, because if it weren't, this would be unwatchable. And we just talked about a film, a documentary film, 20 Days in Mariupol, which is also troubling to watch. So this is not the upbeat Movies 101 that we oftentimes bring to you.
Yeah, they do have a lot in common, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, it's important to note that Garrone also directed the 2008 film Gomorra, which was about Neapolitan gangs, youth gangs, and it was very graphic, very difficult to watch. The imagery, especially of teenagers who were killed, will stick in your mind as well. But in this particular film, for some reason, Garrone goes back and forth between focusing on the characters in Io Capitano and the trials and tribulations that they have to endure. And I think it's such a contrast because these two boys, so it's Seydou and his cousin
Moussa,
are so optimistic about their ability to get to Europe. They just want to get to Europe. They've saved up all of this money. I think Moussa is the cheerleader throughout the initial phase of their journey because Seydou is more reluctant, and he doesn't seem to be knowledgeable necessarily about the travails that they will undergo. But he's more reluctant because he doesn't want to leave his mom and his siblings because he knows that they will struggle in his absence. But he's sort of focused on the end result, which is we're going to have this much better life. My family's going to have this much better life.
And we're going to be on an adventure.
Right. There was an adventure at first component to this. But wow, it's a narrative film. So it's a fictionalized film. But as Dan pointed out, it is based on the struggles of real people. I mean, one of the advisors to this film was a person from Côte d'Ivoire who had taken 3 years to make this journey from West Africa to the European continent. And so I think to describe what they deal with, I mean, you never know who to trust in this movie. You never know who is in charge. And so they're constantly taken advantage of by people who are supposed to be helping them. These people who we see, are they law enforcement? Are they government officials? Are they bandits themselves? You know, what are the chances of the kids being able to make this through? And then at one point they become separated. And that really, I think, becomes terrifying from our vantage point and also from their vantage point. But, you know, they have to cross the Sahara and then they end up in this Libyan prison for some period of time where they're watching people be tortured. And just when you're about to, like, walk out, Seydou manages to befriend, or he's befriended by a builder who can actually contribute. And so he becomes sort of a mentor for Seydou. And so that at least was a little respite from the other things that we were seeing. But wow, this is so difficult to watch, narrative film that it is.
Well, I keep seeing this descriptor, and I don't know where it came from. But if you Google the movie or even go to the IMDb page for Io Capitano, it's described as, quote, a Homeric fairy tale, which, you know, and it does have a couple moments where the characters sort of retreat into fantasy. There's one moment
Correct,
in particular
yeah.
in the desert where a woman
They're
seems to float above
yeah,
the
yeah,
ground.
Yeah. yeah.
And I do suppose they go on an odyssey of sorts. But I think that descriptor is inaccurate. And I also think it invites the audience to sort of distance themselves from this story through some kind of, you know, stylistic device or a sense
yeah.
of whimsy that I really don't think is there in the movie. And certainly
it's
some
not
of,
so much inaccurate as it is just off base.
Yeah, I think so. And Garona himself has made films that are sort of fairy tales in a way. I mean, I think his last feature was an adaptation of Pinocchio. So
Correct.
It's not like he doesn't work
appreciate
in
the
that
difference
mode
or something.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, I want to get that out of people's minds. I had a similar reaction to Io Capitano as I did to another Oscar-nominated international feature this year, which we reviewed, which was Society of the Snow, which was about the soccer team that was stranded in the mountains, where, I mean, it's beautifully made and it's beautifully acted. But as you kind of alluded to, MP, it's 2 hours of kind of one bad thing after another happening to these characters. And I did feel at times that Garone didn't really have an attitude towards this material beyond, isn't it awful that this happened? I think that what does elevate it beyond that is those two central performances. The actors are Seydou Sarr and Mustapha Fall. I don't know if they've been in movies before, but they're both really terrific. And I think they bring human dimensions to these characters. They're not just there for bad things to happen to them. They bring humanity to it.
I should add that at the Venice International Film Festival, Garone not only won Best Director, but Seydou Sarr won the Best Young Promising Actor Award.
He
justifiably so.
He certainly deserved it. I'm not as high on the movie as the Venice jury was, but I think that when the movie does work, I think it's when it's about the specifics and the processes that they have to go through in order to survive. So just how they get these counterfeit passports, how they find work, and the little subplot about him and this older man kind of working together to build this fountain
in the middle of the desert. Yeah.
How they reconnect with Senegalese communities miles away mm-hmm. from home. I thought that was the stuff that really brought the story to life in a way that felt more than just miserableism, because I think sometimes these stories, when made by, you know, an Italian filmmaker, it does threaten to tip over into that, into almost exploitation at times. I don't think this movie ever gets to that point, but it threatens to, I think, in a couple spots.
For me, Io Capitano works basically because it's a rite of passage for Seydoux himself. I mean, if you look at the film as here's this 16-year-old, and I think Seydoux, the actor, was 17 when he made the movie, but the character Seydoux is only 16 years old. You know, he's this excitable and very likable kid, but he's just a kid. And throughout the film, we see him grow into a man. And at the end, when he's saying, Io Capitano, I'm the captain of this ship, he has taken responsibility and he's proud of that. And so the movie ends in a way in which you're going, yeah, okay. Oh my God, what happens next?
Well, yeah, and also and just the idea that he had to find that pride through what he does is
right.
unsettling.
And of course, we haven't talked about the fact after these two kids get separated, like Seydoux, I mean, he takes so much time and effort to find his cousin. He is positive he can find his cousin. And, you know, we are watching thinking to ourselves, that cousin is no longer with us. And then, miracle of miracles, they reconnect. And that might have been a little bit too over the top, but it was also a touching aspect of this, that part of his growth process and so forth. The other thing is, the one thing that they don't focus on is all they wanted to do was get to Italy. They wanted to get...
And they want to make music when they get there.
Right, right. Yeah. But of course, it doesn't necessarily tell the end part of the story. What happens when they actually arrive in Sicily? Are they going to be able to go throughout, you know, just have free access to the rest of Europe? No. And so that, I mean, Garrone sort of left that part of the story alone because they would have been thrown into some detention center and, you know, had to deal with that whole process. Yeah. But I was fine to let it end where it ended. But I thought this movie was really difficult to watch. So,
yeah. And I think it fit in, you know, even the qualms that you have, Nathan, I think it fit in with the five. We saw all five of those international films.
Yes.
And Zone of Interest, I think, probably deserved to win over the others.
I agree.
But, I mean, five really, really pretty good films. At any rate, that was our discussion of the film Io Capitano. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Pat Truthart, and I discussed the Oscar-winning documentary feature 20 Days in Mariupol. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from J.R.R. Tolkien. I do not love the bright sword for its sharpness, nor the arrow for its swiftness, nor the warrior for his glory. I love only that which they defend. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.